Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello everyone, welcome back to the podcast. In the last episode, I was talking about culture shock experiences in London. So I've worked in London for ages and ages, for, you know, lots of years, and I met lots of students from around the world, and they would often ask me the same questions, things that they didn't understand about London life, or things that confused them or frustrated them, things like, you know, the food, the public transport system, even why we have two taps in the bathroom. And I have decided that I'm going to go through a list of the most common complaints that students have had about life in London, and then try and explain the reasons why these things happen, as a way of attempting to just clarify the reasons. Okay. All right. So I'm going to carry on. In the last one, I got through about the first seven items in the list, and I dealt with these things. I talked about these things in the last episode. Let's just have a look at my list here. We've had why do you have a separate hot tap and a separate cold tap? That has been dealt with now. Fine. I found the reasons. You'll have to listen to the previous episode to listen to them again. Why don't you have electrical sockets in the bathroom? Done. The food is so plain and unhealthy. The weather is miserable. It's always raining. Why do you drive on the left? Trains are always late and they're often full. Why are there so many foreigners here? I haven't met a real English person yet. Okay, so let's carry on with the list. And I've got... I'm now going to do point 8 in the list until point 22. So let's get down to business. So we've got it's too expensive. It's too expensive in London. Yes, it is. Yes, I agree. You're right. Point taken. It is definitely too expensive. Why? Well, I mean, the pound is strong. Generally, the pound tends to be strong. It's quite a developed economy, and usually the pound is quite strong. But in London, you know, it's a very desirable place to live, and so naturally prices creep upwards. Also, there are lots of very rich people living in London, lots of people working in finance who earn massive amounts of money, and so they can afford expensive accommodation. They can afford to pay a lot of money for food, and so because of all these rich people who've got lots of money to spend, generally it causes the prices to inflate. So yes, I agree, it is too expensive. And that's really annoying. So I agree. I accept that point. Number 9 is the beer is warm. The beer is warm. Some people seem to complain about the temperature of the beer that they buy in pubs. And to an extent, I agree with this. Okay, now some types of beer, like traditional beers, for example, English ale, English bitter, for example, those beers aren't supposed to be served at a slightly higher temperature. I mean, they're not warm, they shouldn't be heated up, but they probably served at around room temperature, maybe slightly colder. Now other beers like lager, that's like your kind of your blonde beers, like Heineken, Carlsberg, Stella Artois, things like that. Now I believe they should be served nice and cold, and I accept that often in pubs in England those types of beers are not served cold enough, and it often annoys me. I can't stand getting a pint on a nice summer's day and the pint isn't cold enough, because the beer needs to be really cold for it to be fully refreshing. So that annoys me too. Why is the beer not often cold enough? It could be because of bad cellar management. The cellar is the room beneath the pub, under the pub, in the ground where they keep all the barrels of beer. So it could be that the temperature of the cellar is not regulated properly, or it could just be that the glass that the beer has been served in has just come out of the washing machine. Like, if it's a busy pub, then they have to wash glasses very regularly. And so the glasses go into the washing machine, they come straight out, and they're still a bit hot. And then, you know, the barman uses that to serve a beer, and you get given a beer in a warm glass. And so that's, you know, it's not good enough, is it? It could also be where the glasses are stored. Sometimes the glasses are put on shelves, and the shelves might be right next to a fridge, you know, a refrigerator, and refrigerators give off heat. So it could be that the glasses are sitting there kind of warmed by the refrigerator, and then the beer is served into a warm glass. It's not good enough, is it, really? No, it annoys me. I prefer to get a beer in a cold glass. When I lived in Japan, they would often keep their glasses in the freezer, so the glass was all sort of frosted, and then they'd serve the beer into a frosted glass. That's great, because it's really nice and fresh. Number 10, the houses are old and drafty. A draft is when, okay, if you're sitting next to the window, the window's closed, but you can still feel like a little bit of like air, or a little bit of cold air on the back of your neck. It still feels a little bit cold. It's like the room isn't fully insulated. That little movement of cold air into the room is called a draft. Okay, so it's true, a lot of houses in London might be a bit old and a bit drafty. So I do agree with this, actually. In many cases, old buildings are not very efficient. They're not very energy efficient or well insulated. Many buildings in London are from the Victorian era and therefore have, for example, the original Victorian windows. They let the drafts in sometimes. They don't keep out the cold as well as they should. So it may be necessary for people to install secondary double glazing. That's like another layer of glass, inside the window to add some insulation, but this is often a bit expensive and plenty of people just choose not to do it. Okay, here are now some explanations for why perhaps our windows are a bit drafty, or why you might find it a little bit cold in your bedroom in England. All right, so A, it can be expensive to replace the windows with modern ones. Some buildings are just cheap and poorly maintained because life in London is really expensive and people are attempting to make a living. So some landlords are greedy and they just don't care about their tenants, so they're not willing to spend lots of money on replacing the windows. Also, if you're a student staying in like cheap short let accommodation, you might get slightly poor facilities. Even if it seems expensive to you, you might be renting property which is actually a lot cheaper than the market average. So sorry about that. You might just be like, if you're getting cheap student accommodation, it might be that, you know, the windows are a bit drafty. Sorry. And if you paid more, I know it's really expensive, but if you paid more, you might get, you know, modern windows and fully refurbished and fully insulated properties. Point B. In England, we generally don't feel the cold as much as you, depending on where you come from. But, you know, if you're from like Spain, for example, certainly in the south of Spain, the general ambient temperature is going to be warmer. So you're going to feel the cold a lot more than us. So for us, what's normal, you know, the normal temperature for us is going to feel cold for you. So your landlords might not notice. You know, your landlord or your host family in England might not notice that it's actually a bit cold. And so you come from nice, warm countries, and for you, it's freezing and you can feel the drafts and you feel like, I need to wear a scarf. It's like winter. Well, for us, that's normal. We've developed, you know, we're used to it. So that might be it. Also, you're quite far north. It's just colder. Okay, it's just colder up there, so blame geography. It's not our fault, it's just the nature of, you know, meteorology or whatever. So it just gets colder when you go further north. I mean, that seems obvious, but people seem to forget it. There also may be old laws that protect the windows in these old buildings. So although these windows aren't as effective as modern ones, they do add some value to a property because they are the original traditional Victorian windows, for example. In London, we do value the tradition and the craftsmanship of these old windows. Ultimately, that is perhaps more important than the energy efficiency of the windows. You know, like when you go to buy a house, if you're looking around visiting houses with an estate agent, often the estate agent will refer to the windows as an advantage, a selling point. Like, this house is fantastic because it's got all the original old Victorian sash windows. And you think, oh, lovely old Victorian windows, fantastic, original, traditional. So that somehow increases the value of these old properties. So we just... You might find it a bit ridiculous or a bit strange, but we value that kind of tradition over even things like windows that effectively keep out drafts. Yeah. Okay. There are also, you know, plenty of new buildings in London which are constructed with excellent modern windows and insulation, of course. So we are perfectly capable of installing good windows. So to an extent, I agree with this complaint. I understand that it might be a bit annoying to have like a slightly cold bedroom, but there are plenty of decent reasons for it. I do wish that some of those old windows could be repaired. Maybe that, you know, all it would take is for some clever companies to find ways of replacing traditional windows with new windows that look just as good as the old ones and that retain some of the traditional value of the old ones and yet are really efficient. That would be good, wouldn't it? I'm sure that someone's working on it and they're probably developing nice looking modern windows that somehow retain the class of the old traditional Victorian ones. Number 11, the people are so reserved, they don't talk to each other on the train. Okay. So if you've ever taken the tube, you might notice that people just kind of sit there, not making eye contact. No one talks to each other. People like to just sort of stay in their own little world. They keep themselves to themselves and they mind their own business. One reason for not making conversation on the underground is because we just don't want to disturb the people around us. Okay, the city is so big that you're unlikely to see the same person again. So what's the point in kind of trying to get to know a stranger on the train when it's not really the right time or place to make friends with someone? So it's not that people are unfriendly. People are perfectly friendly. In fact, you'll find that they will help you if you need something. If you ask politely, they're more than glad to help you. But just don't expect to make friends on the tube right away. The train or bus is not really the place for this. It's more likely that you're going to make friends with English people in some sort of social situation. We don't want to get stuck in a conversation for ages on a long journey, all right? We tend to just give each other personal space. We don't invade each other's lives too much. We don't impose ourselves on other people. So if you're kind of cool and you know the rules, then you'll understand this. I'm sure it's the same in many other cities that on crowded public transport, you're not talking to each other, because that would just be awkward and weird. You know, it's already uncomfortable enough that you're all squeezed in there together, but you don't now have to feel obliged to talk to someone that you don't know and who you're never going to see again. It can be a bit stressful or traumatic to be stuffed into a train so close to everyone. So kind of making eye contact or talking can be uncomfortable because people don't have the option to escape from the situation. People don't want to be forced to be rude as well. You know, like they don't want to have to start a conversation which they will then be obliged to finish. It's just... It seems to be embarrassing if someone starts talking to you and you just don't want to talk to them because you've got other things to think about and you're in a rush and you're thinking about work and stuff like that. So, you know, people just prefer not to start the conversation in the first place. And there is a shared understanding on the underground that you just, you know, people mind their own business and so on. It's possible to talk to other people on the tube, but normally you do it. You just make a kind of a quick comment and don't expect the other person to carry on the conversation. So, for example, if you hear an announcement on the tube that you didn't, you know, if there's an announcement like the train on the platform for 15 minutes delay, and you think, oh god, I didn't catch that, what was that, then it's quite normal to just sort of say to another person, sorry, what did he say? Or, sorry, did you catch that announcement? Interesting that we say sorry at the beginning. Sorry, did you hear that? Sorry is just a natural thing you say at the beginning as a way of kind of saying, I don't mean to bother you and I don't want this to be inconvenient and don't worry, I'm not going to keep talking to you. It's okay. It kind of breaks the ice. So that's quite normal to make a quick comment or ask a quick question, but don't expect to then become the person's friend afterwards. People can be reserved, it's true, in England, but it doesn't mean that we're mean. We're not mean people. Just because people respect each other's personal space, it doesn't mean that we're all cold-hearted and unfriendly. In fact, I think it's quite inconsiderate. No, I think it's quite considerate to not impose yourself on other people when they have busy lives to deal with. So we're actually just nice, you know. We don't want to have to rudely end a conversation. We just respect each other's personal space. So it's not that we're just not nice people. We're perfectly nice. We just understand that we respect each other's privacy in a big city where everyone has to live together. Number 12, why don't people carry umbrellas even when it's raining? So I heard this a lot in Japan. A lot of my Japanese students who'd been to England, and one of the things they noticed was that English people didn't seem to carry umbrellas and that they would often sort of get wet in the rain. Now, I think in Japan, people are very conscious of protecting themselves from the elements, like they shade themselves from the sun, and if there's rain, they cover themselves because if they get wet, they don't want to catch a cold. Well, I suppose it's fairly normal in England to not carry an umbrella around with you. Why? Because, well, it can rain any time in England. You know, we have like showers. We don't just have a rainy season. We have showers at any time of the year. And showers don't necessarily last all day. They could just last a couple of hours or even just 10 minutes. So we don't want to carry an umbrella with us all the time, because there's always the possibility of rain. So it's kind of annoying to have to carry an umbrella all the time. Instead, you just sort of take a chance, you know. You expect that sometimes you're going to get a little bit wet, but it's okay. Just kind of run for some cover somewhere and wait for the rain to stop. So, yeah, we don't carry umbrellas all the time because we can't be bothered to constantly have umbrellas every day, because that's just inconvenient. Instead, we've just learned to accept that every now and then we might get a little bit wet in a rain shower, and that's just the way it is. I don't think that English people catch a cold more often than anyone else. I expect our immune system has learnt to cope with the fact that we just get a little bit wet every now and then, and as long as we wrap up warm and dry ourselves off afterwards, then we're fine. Next one, the internet is so slow here. The internet is so slow. These days, the internet is a bit better, but compared to some countries, like, you know, famously South Korea, and also Sweden and other places where they have super brilliant internet connections, yes, it's true, the UK is probably lagging behind a little bit in terms of its internet connectivity. But it's probably the case that people who complain about slow internet are people who live in like residences, you know, students who are living in halls of residence, or students who are using the internet connection in a school, in a large shared building. And so naturally the internet connection is going to be worse in those big shared spaces because so many people are connecting to the network at the same time. It's going to slow the system down. So I don't think it's fair to say that the internet is generally a lot slower in the country as a whole. It's just probably slightly slower than in your country, and certainly if you're using a shared internet network in a large building or a residence or something, then naturally the internet's going to be less reliable. But it's true, we do lag behind some other countries in terms of our internet connectivity, and I hope that improves soon, because there's nothing better than good internet, is there? Oh, it's great, nice, you know, high speed internet connection is just, well, it's a human right, isn't it? It's a basic human right these days. Number 14, you just don't make any effort to speak other languages here. It's just English and that's it. Well, this question has been answered before on Luke's English podcast, and we know that it's probably a question of necessity. The fact is that English is the first language. Well, first language? English is the world's second language at the moment anyway. And so there isn't so much of a need for English people to learn English. No. There isn't so much of a need for English people to learn another language. I mean, we do, but often we do it just for fun, as a hobby. So that's the reason, I guess, just that we don't have to. It's a pity. I think that more English people should learn other languages because it's healthy. It's good to learn another language. It's good for your brain. It's just good for... it's a good way to keep your brain fresh. Apparently, learning a second language can prevent Alzheimer's and dementia because it keeps the brain fresh and healthy and challenged. And also, it just generally, culturally, it's good to learn other languages because it gives you perspective. You learn more about other cultures. You also learn more about the way in which a language operates. You learn about sentence structure, which gives you more perspective on the way that you use your language. So learning another language is good to generate perspective. So I think that people should, but I think it's fairly understandable why in England we don't do it enough, because we don't need to do it so much. I think what English people should be doing, though, is learning how to communicate with foreigners more effectively. The English people need to be more aware of ways in which they can grade their English so that non-native speakers of English can understand them more easily. That would help. That's a question of intercultural communication and being conscious of what is easy to understand in English and what is difficult to understand in English. Number 15, why do the pubs close at 11 p.m? I'm just getting ready to go out at 11 o'clock. Yes, I agree. It's annoying that pubs traditionally close at 11. It's too early. Things are changing because not that long ago, new laws were introduced that allow pubs to stay open late, and a lot of them do. They stay open later than 11 o'clock now, but it's a bit more expensive for them to stay open later because they've got to, you know, pay for their staff and all that kind of thing. So a lot of pubs still close at 11 p.m., which is annoying, because when the clubs, because I'm saying pubs close, I'm getting confused between pubs and close, and so it's clubs is what I'm saying. A spoonerism, I suppose. Anyway, when the pubs do close at 11, that's annoying. And it forces a certain kind of... it encourages a certain kind of drinking culture where people go to the pub. They know that the pub will stop serving drinks at 11. And so they drink more. They binge drink. They're in a rush to drink more. And then at 11 o'clock, the pubs eject everyone so they can close, and all these drunk people hit the streets, and then you get kind of that chaotic situation in an English town on a Friday night at 12 p.m. where there's loads of drunk people in the street and they're all trying to find a place to keep drinking. Why do they close at 11? The best answer I can give is just that's the tradition. It's changing, but many pubs still stick with the tradition and finish at 11 o'clock. Maybe it's just the weather, you know, tends to be colder at night here, so people tend to, you know, go out earlier to take advantage of the slightly better weather earlier in the evening. Whereas in other countries, like in Spain, for example, people don't go out until much, much later. It's just the way it is. It's just different, okay? In London, you can find places that stay open all hours in London because it's such a diverse place. Number 16, English people aren't civilized. They go to the pub and they just drink and drink standing up without eating. You may have a point about being civilized. It's a bit crazy to not eat dinner and to just drink beer standing up in a pub without eating. There's this thing in England, people say eating is cheating. Eating is cheating, that's right. The idea being that if you go out with your mates for a night out and you just drink, then you're not a real man if you need to eat something, okay? And that only the real men just drink, and they don't eat, because if you eat, the food in your stomach absorbs some of the alcohol you're drinking, and it makes it easier for you to carry on. So if people say eating is cheating, they're saying that you're cheating. I didn't realize it was a competition, to be honest. I didn't realize it was a competition to be like who could be the most sort of macho man who doesn't need to eat. I can just keep drinking. I don't need to eat me because eating's cheating. I think that's kind of nonsense. So I agree with that criticism. I think it's silly that people don't eat. And I think it's changing a bit, because now, of course, we've got lots of pubs that serve good food, and it's possible to eat a decent dinner when you're out drinking and so on. But still, in many places, people will consider eating to be cheating, which is ridiculous, really. Cigarettes are ridiculously expensive. That's number 17. It's true, they are ridiculously expensive. The solution to this issue is just don't smoke. Of course, don't smoke cigarettes. It's just another reason for you not to smoke. Obviously, it's extremely bad for your health, but it's also extremely bad for your wallet as well. So you shouldn't do it. Now, how does this happen? Well, the government has decided that they agree that it's very unhealthy for people to smoke, but they're not going to ban smoking because that's too extreme. And also, they don't want to upset the cigarette companies, I expect. So instead, what they do is they just keep raising tax on cigarettes. So this achieves a number of things for the government. On one hand, it allows the government to collect more tax revenue from sales of cigarettes. It also allows the government to sort of appease those people who try to promote health in the country. So they're saying, well, yeah, we're raising tax on cigarettes, no one's going to complain about it because it's unhealthy, and the people who smoke, well, they don't really have a leg to stand on, because ultimately they shouldn't be smoking because it's so unhealthy. So that's the justification for the government. They just say, well, we can raise tax on it because you shouldn't really be smoking anyway because it's unhealthy. There you go. So, smokers don't have that many rights these days. All right. Number 18, people speak really fast here and don't try to help me understand. Well, I did say before that a lot of English people do need to consider the ways in which they talk to non-native speakers of English, and maybe think about grading the language a little bit. But, I mean, they shouldn't do it too much, because otherwise you'll never learn. You'll never ever learn English to the full advanced proficient level if everyone simplifies everything they say when they speak to you. I think there's probably a middle ground somewhere where people are conscious of the ways in which you're failing to understand what they say and adapting a bit, but not too much. Because if they adapt too much, then it's going to sound sort of patronizing and overly simplistic, and it's not going to help you with your English. So I think this is, to an extent, just something you have to accept, that when you meet native English speakers, that they're not going to understand the challenges that you face. So you might just need to remind them, sorry, it's difficult to understand, could you slow down a little bit? And if you do it nicely, then usually they'll be more than glad to slow down a bit. Okay, I think to be honest, most English people are willing to help you understand. It's just that they don't realize how difficult it is for you. It's not that English people don't care, it's just they don't realize that it's so difficult. Maybe because they don't have many experiences of trying to communicate in a second language. They should do. Number 19, when English people do the washing up, they use too much soap and then don't rinse the soap off when they've finished. That's like leaving poison on your plates. I agree with that. When you're doing the washing up, some people, when they're doing the washing up, they fill the basin with hot water, they squirt in some washing up liquid, and then with that soapy water, they clean up their plates, and then they just put the plates onto the draining area, but they don't rinse off the soapy water, which is stupid, isn't it? I think that the soapy water should be rinsed off. I noticed in Japan, people do the washing up in a different way. First of all, they take the sponge and they get it all soapy, so there's lots of bubbles and foam on it, and they wash all of the stuff with all of that foam. That's stage one. So then you get loads of stuff in the sink that's all covered in foam and soap bubbles and stuff. And then they just rinse all of that off and leave it to drain. In England, what you do is you, as I said, fill the basin with hot water, put the soap in, wash it like that, and then leave it to drain. But people should remember to rinse all of the soapy water off, because otherwise you're just eating chemicals that are left on your plates. I mean, we're not such hypochondriacs. We're not so sensitive to these things, and that's why we don't do it. Maybe we should be, but that's probably it. I agree. I think that English people should wash up better. Okay, English people, learn how to wash up properly. Okay, I'm sure that not everyone washes up like that. Lots of people rinse all their soaps off the plates before they dry them. I'm sure they do. I'll tell you who doesn't, though. My dad. He's terrible. He's always leaving soapy plates on the draining area. You have to rinse it all off again. Come on, Dad. Work it out. Next, number 20. They have carpet everywhere. What is this? Carpet land? Carpet world? It's true. Traditionally, in English houses, we do have carpet everywhere. But I think it's just because we think, for us, it's cozy and comfortable and warmer. Maybe it's a temperature thing that it's not like we have like Arctic temperatures, Arctic cold. It's just kind of cold enough for us to want it to be a little bit cozy. So, yeah, we do have carpets on the floor because it's comfortable, it's normal. But more and more houses are now just putting kind of wooden floors because the heating systems are more effective, and so we don't need carpets. Carpet in the toilet is very uncommon these days, in my experience. So, yes, you might find carpet more and more in England. You might find carpet more in England than in your country. That's just because it's normal. We find it cozy and nice. But I agree that it's probably better to take the shoes off. It's just that no one does it, and you feel like you're being a bit petty and a bit bossy if you tell people to take their shoes off. It's like, oh, sorry, can you take your shoes off, please? You know, you're going to come across as like overly particular, you know, like a bit anal if you ask people to take their shoes off all the time. So it's just normal. So it's hard to introduce the culture of taking shoes off before entering a house in England, because not, you know, hardly anyone does it. But I agree that it's better. So point taken on that one. Next item on the list is that the British have a strange sense of humour. And naturally, I don't agree with that. I think what it is that people just don't understand our sense of humour. They're not able to identify the subtleties and the nuances there. So that's it. We have a very detailed, very well-developed sense of humour. Like, for example, in some countries, they might savour wine, like in France, Italy, Spain, or many other places. They might kind of have a very fine appreciation of wine, and every bottle is different, and it's you know, people taste the wine and they enjoy it a lot, and they become very specialized in it. Well, in England, we feel that way about comedy, and we have a very refined, very well-developed sense of comedy and a comedy industry and lots of comedy on TV. So actually, it's not fair to say we have no sense of humour. We've got a very well-developed sense of humour, or a sense of comedy on TV and stuff. It's just that not everyone is equipped to understand it. Maybe there's irony and surrealism in there, but it's just subtle humour. It's kind of cerebral, brainy humour. So you can't say that the English have no sense of humour. It's quite the opposite. We've got a very well-developed sense of humour. I had that once. I was teaching a class about cross-cultural communication, and one student just said to me, British humour. And she started using British humour as a pejorative term. like British humour meaning no humour. You know, oh, this is a British joke, meaning this is a joke that's not funny. Yeah, well, you know, shove off. That's not true. It's just that you don't understand the joke. So I find that to be a little bit narrow-minded. Right, on this note, I think it's time to finish this episode of Luke's English Podcast. Where are we? How many minutes is this? 35 to 30 minutes. Okay, fine. Good. I think I've dealt with the culture shock topic. There's obviously way more to say on this subject, but I think I'm going to stop talking to you now. There'll be, you know, loads of other stuff coming up in the future. How are you, by the way? I haven't asked you that for a while. How are you? You good? Yeah? What have you been up to today? Yeah, really? Really? Oh, okay. Well, you know, yeah, fine. You just feel free. Do whatever you like. I mean, I don't mind. I'm not going to judge you for doing that. I mean, I don't know what everyone else is going to think, but it's fine by me. Well, yes. Well, no, you don't have to tell them. No. Well, yeah, okay. Oh, that's good. That would be really nice. Oh, yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot. Oh, yeah, no one. No, it's really nice to hear that. Yeah, I don't hear that very much, so it's always good to know. That would be great. No, thank you very much. No, I really appreciate that. Well, I just do my best, don't I? Do you realise that you're having a conversation with me? You are. Okay, fine. Okay, I've just done about something like 90 minutes of podcasting, so I'm now going to stop talking. I'm going to have another cup of tea, and I'm going to do the washing up. And you'll be glad to know I will be thoroughly rinsing all the plates and dishes and glasses and knives and forks and things, so there will be no washing up liquid left when I'm done. All right, thanks very much for listening. If you appreciate my work, then you could always send me a donation. Visit teacherluke.co.uk. You'll find at the bottom of the screen, bottom left of the screen now, there's a little donation button, and you might find them in other places under audio episodes as well. Bottom left-hand corner of the screen, there's a donate button. Do send me your donations, because I'm although I've got some ads on my site, I get something like 10p a day, 10 pence a day. That's like 0.1 pounds a day from my advertising. It's not very much, is it? A note on the advertising. A lot of people use ad blockers on their internet browsers. Ad blockers are programs or bits of software that block any Google ads which appear on websites, so you don't see them. Now, I've put a few Google ads onto my website as a desperate attempt to gain some revenue from doing Luke's English Podcast. The ads don't generate much money, but if you've got an ad blocker on your site and you don't see any of the ads, it means that I'm not getting any revenue from that either. It gets nothing. So do consider removing the ad block for Luke's English Podcast. It's quite simple to do. Usually the ad blocker has a little icon, a little button on the browser at the top somewhere. You can just click that and select don't run on this page, and that way I'll at least get some, you know, little bits of revenue just from the fact that you saw the ads. You don't have to click on them. Hopefully they're not too distracting for you. You don't even have to click on them. Just the fact that you visited the page which has the ads embedded on it, that means I'll get a tiny little addition to my advertising revenue. You could click on those things. It'll just take you to a page that will give you information about, I don't know, it's probably like learning English somewhere or some other bit of advertising. You could click on it. That'll get me a bit more money. You don't have to, of course. Or if you sincerely appreciate the work that I do for you for free, then do consider sending a donation. I don't like to talk about it too much because, you know, I don't want to go on about it. But it does make a big difference, and it helps me to keep doing the podcast. It helps me to cover like web hosting costs and other costs and things. It also just makes it worthwhile, makes it easier for me to justify doing it as well. So do consider making a donation. You can just give me as little or as much as you like using PayPal. I'm looking at different ways of allowing you to donate and different options in the future. For now, I'm now going to stop talking about donations, and I will speak to you again soon. Shall I sing you a song? Yes, I will. Okay, I'm going to sing a song for you. So if you don't want to hear me singing, then this is the end of the episode. If you'd like to hear me do something, then stick around because I'm going to sing something for you. I'm going to pause the podcast because I need to go and get my guitar and I need to decide what I'm going to sing. Guitar or ukulele? I'm going to get the ukulele because it's a happier sound, isn't it? You can't be sad with a ukulele playing. No. So I'm just going to pause it. I'm going to choose a song and then I'm going to play it to you. But if you don't want to hear the song, you don't have to. You can stop listening whenever you want. All right? Good. All right. I've picked a song and it's called Ape Man. And it's by The Kinks, who were a popular group from the 60s and 70s. They come from London. And here it is. Sorry in advance for my singing, but, you know, I'm an English teacher. I'm not a pro. But I'm going to give it my best shot. Here you go with Ape Man by The Kinks. I think I'm so sophisticated because I'm living my life like a good Homo sapien. But all around me, everybody's multiplying and they're walking around like flies, man. So I'm no better than the animals sitting in their cages in the zoo, man. Cause compared to the flowers and the birds and the trees, I am an ape man. I think I'm so educated and I'm so civilized cause I'm a strict vegetarian. With the overpopulation and inflation and starvation and the crazy politicians, I don't feel safe in this world no more. I don't wanna die in a nuclear war. I just wanna sail to a distant shore and make like an ape man. I'm an ape man, I'm an ape man, oh I'm an ape man. I'm a King Kong man, I'm a voodoo man, oh I'm an ape man. Cause compared to the sun that sits in the sky, compared to the clouds as they roll on by, compared to the bugs and the spiders and flies, I am an ape man. In man's evolution, he's created the city and the motor traffic rumble. But he'd give me half a chance, I'd be taking off my clothes and living in the jungle. The only time that I feel at ease is swinging up and down in a coconut tree. What a life of luxury to live like an ape man. I'm an ape man, I'm an ape ape man, oh I'm an ape man. I'm a King Kong man, I'm a voodoo man, oh I'm an ape man. I look out the window but I can't see the sky. Air pollution is a fogging up my eyes. I wanna get out of the city alive and make like an ape man. I'm an ape man, I'm an ape ape man, oh I'm an ape man. I'm a King Kong man, I'm a voodoo man, oh I'm an ape man. I'll be your Tarzan, you'll be my Jane. I'll keep you warm and you'll keep me sane. We'll sit in the trees, eat bananas all day, just like an ape man. I'm an ape man, I'm an ape ape man, oh I'm an ape man. I'm a King Kong man, I'm a voodoo man, oh I'm an ape man. I don't feel safe in this world no more. I don't wanna die in a nuclear war. I just wanna sail to a distant shore and make like an ape man. Thanks for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, you can visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.